The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
All right, so you sent a text to me yesterday about Tina Turner passing away at the age of 83. Some people are saying that she was suffering from some type of kidney disease for the last couple years of life. You know, when you're 83 years old and they're like, we don't know what the reason of her death is, I'm like, she's 83. It's like, yeah. I mean, I know we have to have a reason. Anything after 80, I'm pretty much like kamikaze. I'm like, you know, you're old. But she was getting after pretty much. And it's interesting, and I posted something on Facebook and Twitter about this. I need to post more things. I know that. I said, you know, it's amazing how you really don't realize just how instrumental and iconic an individual is until after they pass away. And then you start getting these articles, and you start reading about them, and you're like, wow, these are some amazing stories. And Tina Turner was one of those people. I wasn't a Tina Turner fan. I knew of Ike and Tina. Mm-hmm. I knew that Proud Mary was a big song. I also know that CCR did it first, and we played their version. But then she came out with a song with Eric Clapton called Tearing Us Apart, which mm-hmm. was a song that we actually played. We were a little like Queen of Rock and Roll. We were a classic rock station. We used to play new stuff, and we weren't sure if we should play that song, even though it was an Eric Clapton song off his Eric Clapton album. I think it was from the August album, because Tina Turner was on it.
I said, see how
it was kind of like... It was kind of like you'd play, if you're a classic rock station, you play Elton John, but you wouldn't play Don't Go Breaking My Heart with Kiki D.
That's true.
It's Elton John, but you don't play Kiki D. You can't pull that off on a classic rock. So we were kind of like, but we did play it, and it rocked, and she just wailed on it. She was fantastic. A couple of interesting classic rock connections, though, if you're trying to make that connection between her and rock and roll. David Bowie in 1983 had just received a new contract with Capitol Records, and at that point in time... Tina Turner had just gotten canceled from the same label. And she was out at some swanky nightclub bar playing a gig somewhere. And the suits at Capitol wanted to take David out to celebrate his new signing with Capitol Records. And David said, I've got plans tonight. I'm going to see Tina play at this bar down the street. You're welcome to join me if you'd like. Well, the Capitol bigwigs went and joined them, saw her sing, and she signed a deal. And then, of course, Private Dancer... Yeah, you know, what's love got to do with it? It all came afterwards. The other thing I think was really interesting, and of course all these stories coming out because everyone's looking for angles. We all know about, you know, her abuse and Ike, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But she had a huge crush on Mick Jagger her entire life. Until about a month ago, she was talking about how much she loved herself some Mick Jagger.
That's an interesting...
And, of course, she was in Switzerland.
Yep.
A lot being made, the fact that she was living in a $76 million home that her and her husband had just bought a couple of years ago. And her records sold a lot better in the UK and in Europe than they did here in the United States, which was kind of interesting because she was from a little town in Tennessee called Nutbush City Limits. A pretty amazing story. And, of course, if you've seen any of her documentaries about her life, you understand that she went through just an absolute...
Ike Turner was like...
The article you sent me was just... I mean, it had everything.
Well, that's the one I sent. It was a nice summary.
What a sad, insecure man. And he was, you know, he had his own little thing. He was doing... He was kind of like the equivalent, say, of a Velcro Pygmies here in Birmingham. They sold out everywhere they went.
Right.
But they weren't big enough to sell out a 20,000, you know... person arena, but wherever the Velcro Pygmies are playing, it gets a great show. And he was doing that, and then she was like 17, I think, and he heard her and was like, you know, it'd be great to have they fall in love. He's great. He's good to her.
Yes.
They fall in love. They
Which
get married. And,
a lot.
Afterwards, yeah, he starts beating the hell out of her. And yeah, the stories of her running across the street from the hotel with 36 cents in her pants pocket.
Coming on stage after being beat up.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what really struck me about this story, Sonny? He beat her so bad that he wanted the bruises and the swollen. He wanted it seen, which I have never.
Yeah,
you know, normally I don't know because I've never touched a woman. But if you beat somebody, you don't want people to know your wife's being abused.
Right.
He wanted her to look bad so people knew that he did it, which is like. I mean, how sick is that?
It is. I mean, it's
because it was a power thing for him.
Exactly. I mean, so abuse of any kind, physical, sexual, psychological, is always it's a power thing. It's always a power thing. It may not start as a power thing, but it gets, and like, particularly physical abuse, it gets, it happens because the individual, the abuser, cannot manage the interaction in a way that is healthy. They can't. So it becomes a power thing. The thing with Ike Turner, that to your point, becomes bizarre but understandable psychiatrically, is the desire to show his power in the world, mm-hmm. his worth in the world, his presence in the world. And in his mind, harming her and then having that be seen is this weird, twisted way of saying, you see, I have a presence in the world.
And I control you.
And I control, well, I control you. And then, but to the point about her being out, him wanting people to see the bruises, it's not just I control you. He's saying to the world, I control her.
Yeah.
Because he can't control anything.
Yeah.
And that's how, you know, that's how they painted Ike Turner. That's how she described him, was incredibly insecure, incredibly self-loathing. And that happens with a lot of men who are abusers.
Jerry Lee Lewis is another one of those guys where, you know, they're stars, but they're incredibly insecure. He was dorky looking. He was kind of strange. And Ike even said in that article, he told her, I'm not a very attractive man. And she really felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
But she's beautiful. She married him.
Absolutely.
You know? And to think that once she started, people started showing up to see Tina and not Ike. And I think that's where the abuse started.
Well, it is. And then the other part is, this is interesting from a relationship standpoint. So she's becoming more popular, if you will, than I am. Mm-hmm. There's the second part. We've talked about this in relationship shows. Am I going to lose her?
Yeah.
Not lose her. Is she growing away from me because of all of this? And I love her. And I don't know how to keep her.
Gosh, we see that in governments all the time, don't we?
Huh?
You're going to start saying bad things about me, or you're going to start doing your own thing, I'm going to control you. I will do whatever it takes. I will kill your family.
Yeah.
I will have spies on you.
Yep.
You will not leave this country because you're under, and you will sit there on camera and say how much you love me, or else I will have you killed.
Right, because it is a... it is a last ditch, desperate, like, realization that I'm losing control mm-hmm. of it. We talked about in corporations all the time. You know, this is a strange, let me put like a break in it because this is not physical abuse. But I see this in incredibly powerful executives all the time. They have all the power in the world.
Mm-hmm.
All the power in the world in their organization, and they are doing everything they can to keep control, right? To clamp down. And you talk to them, you're like, what are you doing? Like, you got, the fear is that they're going to lose that control.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fear. They can't even necessarily point to anything. And it's, so it's like getting out ahead in this weird way. If I keep everything under my thumb, then there's no chance that I will lose that.
Yep.
And not having the confidence that what they do is enough to keep people engaged.
You either live in fear or love, man. And when you start living in fear, crazy shit
absolutely.
Happens. I'm not taking anything away from Tina Turner. She had 10 albums overall. She had a bunch of live things. Of course, she did the Mad Max thing. She sang on We Are the World.
Oh, that's right.
She did a lot of incredibly
So why isn't things. Tina queen of rock and roll?
Well, I mean, she wasn't really rock and roll, but I mean... I just think by her stage presence, I mean, she had the legs up to there. She had the look. She could just sing with the best.
Was she the first to do that, you think, then, as a female?
One of the few females outside, you know, I'd say Beyonce, where she got up and she owned the stage. And there's not a lot of females that do that. Pat Benatar didn't do that. Blondie didn't do that. Melissa Etheridge didn't do that. She had a stage presence where she was.
Interesting.
She always had the 3-inch heels on. She was beautiful. She had the hair. She owned the stage. And I think because of that, she was considered.
So who's more? Who is the queen of rock and roll? I understand the Tina Turner piece. So from Tony Curry's perspective, who is the true queen of rock and roll? Nothing, not taking anything away from Tina Turner. She's earned it, but.
Wow, that's hard.
Well, that's why
because
that
because there's not one that just really. I mean, I think about Joan Jett. I think about. I'm just thinking about all the females that I've seen.
Janis Joplin.
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, if she's still alive, perhaps. Talk about a stage presence. She was just crazy. That's a good one. You could certainly make an argument for that, but I just think because I think if you take the entire canvas of what Tina Turner's life was about, and how she was redeemed and how she got redeemed, and she came from this very small, poor, I think it makes for a wonderful story. I'm not saying she wasn't.
No, but it's the whole, it's the rock and roll piece. I think it's fascinating. You brought up, you just said Beyonce.
Yeah.
So is Beyonce the queen of rock and roll now?
Yeah, well, I mean, Tina Turner's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She got in a couple of years ago. So, you know, she is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But if you look at her, I love the blind resume. If you do the blind resume of Tina Turner's work, and she won 8 Grammys. I mean, she did a lot of great stuff. I mean, she was legendary. There's no doubt. I mean, she was the #1 story on every nightly news story last night. So, yeah, she was huge. But I'm not going to. People are like, oh, you need rock and roll. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's got blues artists.
A little bit right.
So let's forget about that part. But I'll give it to her. I mean, yeah, that's fine. I would have loved her, Tina Turner do some rock albums.
Well, that's...
Dolly Parton's even doing one of those. I think that would have been really... But she did. She crossed over a little bit. She sang with Mick. She did We Are the World. Yeah. She did stuff with David Bowie. She sang on one of his live albums. So she could get after it. I think Tina Turner was so strong.
Did that make her rock over there?
If Tina Turner's joining you, you know, on stage, you know, the other night I had a friend of mine that went up and saw Stevie Nicks play with Billy Joel up in Nashville. And during Landslide, Sheryl Crow came out to join her on stage.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's a nice...
Yeah.
Addition. You know, Stevie Nicks is obviously here. Sheryl Crow is unbelievable in her own right. And Billy's just playing music. And so, but, you know, when Tina comes out, man, it's all Tina. I mean, there ain't nothing else on the stage but Tina Turner.
Right.
So if not for her music, just for her look. I mean, she just owns the thing. And she's 83 years old. Black people age so flipping well. What is up with, black people always look so good. Yeah, awesome skin. I kid you, man. I got a friend of mine that's 87 years old, and I swear he don't look like a day over 62. And I'm like, he's like, black is it, baby? I'm like, okay. He's like, you white people get all wrinkly, and you doing Botox and all that shit. And he goes, us black people, we just age gracefully. I'm like, you're right, man. Black people age so beautifully. Remember Lena Horne? Lena Horne, all we had is flipping Dick Clark. And I don't know what the hell Dick Clark did to his hair or his face or whatever.
That was work.
Dick Clark always looked like he was like 60 when he was like 92 years old.
Yeah.
But when white people have work done, we look like shit. Black people don't have to have any work done. And they look fantastic. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. All right.
That's a great segment.
Rest in peace, Tina Turner. She was fantastic. We loved her. And as soon as we find out some more details on exactly how she died, we'll let you know. All right, so I love this this transformation we're going through when it comes to a change in names, you know, from the Aunt Jemima to, and we've done all these different names, and we're celebrating the life of George Floyd today, who was killed 3 years ago, and he was the beginning of a lot of these things. If you're not really into the George Floyd thing, well, there was a lot of good things that happened. We took down a lot of our Confederate things. We changed names. The Cleveland Indians changed their names. The Washington Redskins changed their names. And, we're still waiting on Florida State. So, but occasionally someone will change their name and I'm like, why? What'd they need to change their name for? And I'm like, okay, this is out of control. And then I learned a little something and I'll share that with you coming up on the other side. Plus, I'm so happy that the Gen Z people have finally gotten it together. The Gen Z, if you're part of that Gen Z generation, I'm so happy you're finally starting to figure things out. I'll tell you why coming up here in just a second right here. We're going to be on Fox 6 at 9:35 this morning along with Janice and Toy and, of course, Mickey and the Dubs and the entire crew. We're going to be talking about banning TikTok. Would it be a good idea? I know a lot of parents would think it'd be awesome.
So we're going to have an in-depth geopolitical...
I'm going to be really interested to see how many TikTok influencers start fighting this. Is there going to be a big protest?
There are, well, TikTok's suing Montana.
Well, they're going to sue Montana, but I mean,
yeah,
if you took, let me ask you this: if you took away Facebook,
they own Instagram, so you're taking away both, right?
If you're going to take away TikTok, now I know why they're using TikTok, and I think a lot of people into our text this morning with Jeremy, the producer of Fox 6. A lot of people think that this is a government move. It has nothing to do with the China thing. This is just their way of kind of controlling the conspiracy theorists, which I don't believe to be true.
Because if that's true, that's terrible.
We'd be blocking all social media then.
Right, exactly.
And that wouldn't be good for anybody. All right, we'll be back in 30 seconds.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.